I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
All right, Seth has a lot of good ideas. You really do, Seth. You're very creative.
Well, thank you.
Yeah,
I'm just plugging along, trying to do my thing. You know, I don't. This is a combination of Southern Belle and Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, I was gonna say. All right,
I'm just
plugging along,
doing my thing. I just, you know, sometimes when you wonder about your place in the universe, you have to wonder, what's the universe's place in me? There you go.
Just
that's Matthew McConaughey.
Out here throwing my co-host in front of a bus. It involves a lot of people from California. That's all. So the reason I bring up your creativity and your great ideas is you had a great idea yesterday, and I think you talked about it on the show because we had people congratulating us for going and executing it. But you said yesterday, well, I won't say it. You lay out the idea here, the idea had yesterday poll on Twitter.
I was reading this article, Sean. Mm-hmm. Oh, and what I was telling you during the break that I said that I would just tell the listeners because we were coming back from break. I also have a subscription to Medium.com, mm-hmm. which I very much have enjoyed so far. It's like $5 a month, I think. And you get like all this different. So it's cool. You got to pay for it, but I've actually used it quite a bit. But anyway, I'm reading this article about the Dodgers winning their World Series. And the question was, should this have an asterisk? And as I'm reading it, it hadn't even occurred to me. Even though people bring it up, it's kind of white noise to me. I really haven't thought about the Dodgers or the Lakers or really the future NFL champion. I haven't really thought of them as being asterisk worthy because the good teams made it far and deep into the playoffs, and it kind of seems like everything has worked out. But as I read the comments and saw how angry Dodgers fans were that this would even be brought up, I thought, gosh, wouldn't it be fun to ask a Twitter poll question about which championships are most asterisk worthy in the last 5 years and leave the Astros completely off of it? Because the names that I came up with are all California-based. And I would say the Lakers because they won their championship, the Dodgers because it's a COVID championship. And then just for good measure, I threw in the Golden State Warriors just because, frankly, Kevin Durant never should have been allowed to go there. They should have blocked that move. So I say asterisk. That's BS. But I knew that would get people going. But I said, Sean, I don't have the will, the intestinal fortitude, the mental toughness to actually put this out here on Twitter. Right. I'm not self-confident enough. I don't want multitudes of people, thousands, literally thousands of people calling me a moron. So I can't do it. But you I know can. So I had you go ahead and ask that question.
Yes. You said, Sean, you would be really good at asking this question on Twitter. And I was like, thanks, Seth. I think I'll go do that. Here's the tweet. Seeing a lot of asterisk talk lately, and it's got me thinking, which title team has the biggest asterisk of the last 5 years? Keep in mind a footprint that includes the Astros banging on trash cans in 2017. I said the Dodgers in a short season, the Lakers in the bubble, or the Warriors with Kevin Durant thanks to a big jump in the salary cap. And then I emphasize it with the exclamation point of, those are the big three for me. And so I put those three choices up, and Nelly, the replies and the tweets that rolled in, the engagement in this tweet was off the charts. Seth, what I found was that fans of the two LA teams, I think probably still too busy celebrating their recent championships to worry about what a sports talk show host in Houston has to say. But boy, did the Warrior fans come out in droves. Not happy.
Yeah.
they did not like the idea that
you know what happened, Sean, was one of their huge fan accounts fell for it, got suckered right in, mm-hmm. and put it out there. So that's where it's so all of a sudden they blasted out to all their people. And
is that
that's
what
where,
happened?
Yeah, that's where some of the true beautiful stuff. Like honestly, it got to the point where I'm a little bit concerned for your personal safety
really?
With some of these people. Because I saw how many people actually clicked on your profile, over 1,000 people. Those are angry Californians who are like actually putting your name on a list somewhere, a list of people to kill or maim.
Yeah, well, once they allow people back in their state, maybe I'll think about going back out there again. Here's some of the quote tweets. The Warriors did everything the right way, yet they get on here. The hate is real. Another one. Boy, you big salty, bro. Puts Warriors for being good, but leaves out the Astros who literally cheated. Seth, the replies where the Astros got mentioned by name are the ones that I take the most pride in. The ones where it was as much about the team that I, air quotes, left off the poll as it was about me putting their team in the poll.
The problem is, this is what's happened on social media. Because there are so many genuinely crazy people out there, or just genuinely, I guess, biased people, it's that it's become impossible for some people, if it's any kind of a charged topic or if it involves anything that you actually love, you've got no filter, and it's almost like if you see something stupid, there's not a part of you that thinks, or in some people, they don't think, like, wait a second, is this a ruse? Like, no, because there are probably people out there that would just genuinely think, like, no chance for the Astros having an asterisk whatsoever.
Yeah.
But tell me, Sean, how do you get to the point? Because if I did something like that, because even sometimes when I'll tell it, when I make a sarcastic joke and people don't get it, it drives me insane that they think, like, I'm trying to make this, I'm not trolling, I'm just making a sarcastic joke and I assume everybody would know. It drives me insane. Like, I feel like it's some kind of, is this some kind of deep-seated insecurity that I don't want strangers to think I'm a complete moron? Or is that a natural human thing?
I don't know. I think maybe the smarter you are, the more you feel that way. You're a very smart person and you recognize stupidity pretty easily. And I think general human stupidity frustrates you more than it frustrates the average person, is the sense
really?
I get. Yes.
That doesn't sound like a very forgiving Christian thing to be.
Like, it's just like telling you what I've observed. I think you're a fine human being. I'm just telling you that I think you have a lower tolerance for general human stupidity, especially when there's no context or tone attached to it.
Okay, because that makes it sound like I'm just like I'm picking on unintelligent people, and that's not true at all. I come from a family of many, many unintelligent people,
right.
And I love them dearly. It's a lack of intelligence combined with an arrogance.
Yes.
About, like, there are a lot of people out there who don't realize how unintelligent they are.
Yes.
And that's what bothers me more than anything. When they, like, try to do a mic drop after a really dumb argument, you feel helpless. You feel like, well, there's nothing I can do other than resort to physical violence at this point.
Do you
see what you've driven me to?
That is exactly what I mean. Yes, the lack of intelligence combined with what they think is really intelligent.
Yeah,
stuff
yeah,
that they're saying yeah. there. My favorite part about this whole thing was our friend Coach Middlescreen jumping in almost as the third member of Payne and Pendergast. It's almost like the show was Payne, Pendergast, and Middlescreen yesterday. He jumps in and he starts talking about the poll, and he says that he starts getting into it with some Warriors fans. Like there's a Warrior fan who retweeted or quote tweeted the poll and said, Warriors World. I think that's who you were referring to.
Yeah.
Said LMAO, cry some more. Coach Middlescreen says, hey, nobody's saying the 2015 Warriors didn't win without an asterisk. The 2016 and 17 Warriors exploited rules that were unique to that particular team, which allowed them to create a team which otherwise would have been never would have been legally constructed. A very fair asterisk, if you ask me. And then Warriors World goes off, exploited rules. They signed a free agent, Middlescreen. Yeah, but the jump in the salary cap caused irreparable harm to the integrity of the game because NBA players lack the competitive fire to compete. Like, just using all the buzzwords that probably had this Warriors World guy ready to do exactly what you said, which was put our names on a list and make sure that if we ever showed up in the state of California, we would be shot on sight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody says plenty of smart people are dumb. That's true, too. You know what it is and the classic example of that would be like the engineer who wants to argue with his auto mechanic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like there's a certain or even worse, maybe not even an engineer because they tend to be pretty mechanically inclined. Let's say somebody who's really bright in in some other aspect assumes that it filters over into everything else. They're like, oh, no. I know more than the AC repairman because I've got a master's in English. You know, like it's just some stuff like that. I guess it's an arrogance with an unwillingness to acknowledge your own limitations, which I'm sure we all fall victim to at times. But at least some give me some hint that you understand that you are wrong sometimes.
Along those lines, Seth, like part of me as I was looking at the replies and the retweets yesterday, and I'm thinking to myself, are there really this many people that think I'm serious about this right now? Should I lose my faith in or continue to lose my faith in mankind? Because certainly it feels like a little brick falls out of the wall every day in my faith. Should I continue to lose faith in mankind over the replies to this? Or should I assume that the intelligent people who know that this is a troll don't take the time to reply or congratulate me over something like this?
Yeah. Yeah, then you're getting to the level of me like overthinking stuff like this. You just got to let it go.
Okay.
And
I've let it go.
Sean, and speaking of like highly intelligent conversations, I got to relay this conversation I had with my wife who's out at a construction site of ours for a place we have. We've been held up because we're getting new electrical service, but they had to wait. I'm giving my Beavis laugh right now, even thinking of it. We had to wait for an electrical pole to be installed. So
that's all.
So I've been like trying to bait my wife into conversation about like this pole and how we're gonna get a new pole. And she desperately needs a new pole in her front yard, but not the backyard. All this stuff, and she won't go for any of it. She trolls me in the middle of my radio show she's out at the construction site right now. She texts this. I see the pole going in, !
Oh!
What the hell am I supposed to do with that?
Oh, Randy.
What the hell am I supposed to do? How the hell am I supposed to concentrate on my radio show with that going on?
Basically married to Andrew Dice Clay here. That's awesome. That is great. Brandy's awesome. All right.
I've learned, by the way, a strategy for dealing with people at like utilities and everything. I try to be as funny and lighthearted as possible in my emails. And I think they're so used to being just bombarded with angry people all the times that I've gotten so much mileage out of like a spoonful of sugar, just joking about things.
Yeah.
Like, hey, I know it's not your fault too, but blah, blah, blah. But by the way, it's been an absolute dream. I don't know why I haven't taken this attitude of extreme pleasantness. Well, I'm pretty pleasant with people in general, like away from the radio. But this especially, like really putting the extra effort into being like the most polite, nicest person ever with a public utility
worker.
You
still have a lot of years to continue to deploy this new cuddly Seth Payne. You're good, Seth.
Yeah.
You're good to go. Why I am more nervous now than ever that George Springer might be gone. That's next. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday, Football Friday. Presented by Carbach Hopadillo IPA.
The Hopadillo.
The Hopadillo, baby.
Hopadillo. You got to handle the Hopadillo with care. I didn't know about, you know, I can remember the first time I bought a couple six-packs of Hopadillo. And that's where I got hooked on IPAs, which is weird because it's a stronger IPA, right? But I feel like once you get the Hopadillo in your blood, then you're just on.
It's on. So, Seth, I think there's a general nervousness.
I've had three Hopadillos this morning.
Yeah, so I can tell. Yeah.
Struggling to get words out.
In 40 minutes, you'll be able to go chug all you want to. So I think there's a general nervousness among Astro fans, the average Astro fan, that George Springer might not be here next year, right? He's a free agent. He hasn't given off a vibe where he's all super hepped up about coming back. He's negotiating, right? That's what you're supposed to do. And we know that the Astros may have to do some belt tightening like a lot of teams will. So there's already a general nervousness. I was already nervous that George Springer wasn't going to be back. And then yesterday, I saw my very first top 40 free agents of the MLB offseason. I hadn't looked at any of these lists because most of these lists have not come out yet because there's still been playoffs going on. But now that the World Series is over, we turn our attention to free agency. So Keith Law, who's one of the the more respected baseball analysts has his top 40 free agents of the MLB offseason. And so I opened this and I said, okay, let's wait and see where Springer, hopefully Springer's like, I don't know, ninth or something like that.
To where there, you want to, you're there wishing for less recognition for
yes.
George Springer, right?
Yeah. I want him to sort of just, I know he's not going to fly under the radar, but maybe there's some people that teams would be looking to spend some money on ahead of Springer or whatever.
You love him so much that you want him to be disrespected so you can keep him for yourself.
Yeah, there's a little bit of selfishness involved in my love for him. Yeah, no question about that. Well, it didn't take me long to get to George Springer's name because he's number one on the damn list. He's number one on Keith Law's list of top 40 free agents. And boy, he paints a picture where it feels like, I don't know if Springer's going to get affected at all by this pandemic. Keith Law seems 100% confident that Springer's game, he's 31 right now, is going to age just fine. Worst case, he slides seamlessly over to right field later in his career from center field. Zero concern over the 2017 sign-stealing scandal taking any shine off of his free agency, which I agree with. I agree with that part. I think Springer's a really good baseball player. I think in 2019 he put up monster numbers and there was no trash can banging going on. He's really, really good.
Right. I think one of the biggest things too is that like he is for teams that are looking to take it to the next level or stay at a certain level, he's historically in a lot of different areas one of the best postseason players of all time. Yeah. Like it's just it's absurd some of the things that he's done. As much as I think like the statisticians will want to say, well, it's a smaller sample size, you can't tell as much. There's a certain clutchness about George Springer that a lot of teams are still willing to pay for.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's a big enough body of work in the postseason, Seth, to where it's not one of these things where he just got hot in one postseason. They're like, boy, look what he did that postseason. He's a great postseason player. No, you go look at a lot of these lists that have most this, most that. And granted, Springer plays in an era where you play more preseason or postseason games than Reggie Jackson or Mickey Mantle did. But
got the most home runs in a single World Series. Yeah. You know, World Series games are still the same.
Yeah.
It's just like you know that when the bright lights are on, even when he is slumped in the playoffs at times, he comes back with a vengeance.
And,
yeah.
We have an article on our website, 5 landing spots for George Springer, and I guess we can roll through these. Our level of concern that these teams are players for Springer. Now, one of them is the Astros. We're going to talk about that plenty between now and wherever George Springer winds up signing a contract. The Red Sox are the first one on the list. I think that's a legit concern. He grew up in Connecticut. The Red Sox are a team that's looking to get back onto the radar and presumably would do so with some splashy signings. I guess the thing that just would seem weird for the Red Sox to do that is that they just traded Mookie Betts last year so they wouldn't have to pay big money to an outfielder. And then they would pay big money to George Springer, who's 5 years older than Mookie Betts. That would seem, and probably not as much money as Mookie got from the Dodgers, obviously. He got 12 years, $300 million. But that would seem like an odd signing, unless the Red Sox feel like they're a little closer than they appeared to be last year.
Yeah. So. And I think, too, obviously money is the big thing because you got to think about Correa. I think that if you look at what James Click might do this offseason, you have to look at, okay, he came from Tampa. What has Tampa been doing with their team? For one, we really should have predicted that the Astros were going to let Osuna go like they did yesterday because Osuna was due to make $10 million with a health concern coming back as a closer. And the Rays haven't spent any money on a closer in the last 5 years, even though they're second in the league in that period in number of saves, a whole lot of the reliever stats. They just don't spend a whole lot of money on relievers. They make smart purchases like Charlie Morton, for instance, in free agency. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I guess, you know what I'd be interested in, Sean? We know how James Click will probably approach the pitching staff, and maybe that can save some money, but we don't know exactly, like, okay, how does James Click view things like George Springer, a 31-year-old player? I mean, does James Click value George Springer as much as the fan base or even other people within the organization that have seen his importance and his value to the team even when he's injured?
Well, does anybody even get to 31 years old in the Rays organization? You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I mean,
well, Charlie Morton.
Yeah.
But at a good contract.
But at a good, I'm talking about everyday players. We know what their philosophy is with the pitching staff. do, and I don't know, I haven't followed the Rays roster that closely during James Click's footprint, but they don't give out a ton of long-term extensions. They gave one out to Evan Longoria many, many years ago, and that actually didn't end up working out for them. They ended up having to trade Evan Longoria.
This is what I would worry about, because one of the stats that Keith Law cites is that since 2014, Fangraph says that Springer has been the 14th most valuable offensive player in the sport, which is a pretty damn impressive stat. And going back to 2014 when he made his debut.
I believe that.
You know, the problem is that that's all the last 6 years. And baseball and James Click or most analytics types are notoriously unsentimental about what you've done in the past. It's all about what you're going to do in the future. Yeah. And I just have a feeling that James Click is not going to be swayed by sentimentality the way every single one of us is.
Do you think it's more likely that George Springer is an Astro next year or Michael Brantley is an Astro next year?
I think that Michael Brantley is a more likely scenario because I think that he could probably be had for a more reasonable contract. Yeah, I think that usually what happens is for the guys that are going to command a whole lot of money, especially for things like postseason production, you know, there's decision makers out there that even if their statisticians are telling them, hey, look, it's just kind of random chance that he's so good in the playoffs. The baseball guys, like the money makers and decision makers are saying, yeah, go screw you, math boy. I know that this guy's clutch in the playoffs and they're willing to spend a little bit extra for it. I don't know if James Click is like that. I think he's going to be like more strictly analytical.
They're going to miss Springer if he's not here next year, Seth. But I think Brantley is really, really underrated glue in the middle of that lineup. He's such a tough out. He's such a professional. He's just so quietly efficient with what he does that it'll feel weird that Springer wouldn't be in the lineup, in large part because he's the leadoff hitter. That's a spotlight position for a team. It'll just feel weird having somebody other than Springer batting leadoff for this team. And my guess is it would be they just bump Altuve back up to bat leadoff for this team would be my guess. I don't know. But
that's
Brantley,
funny. We've come a long way, Sean, from Springer being one of these new age leadoff guys where you put a power guy in your leadoff to where now it's going to feel weird to have a guy like Altuve.
Who can run a little bit.
Sprays
the ball everywhere. But Brantley, Seth, just especially when this team was struggling at times and Brantley was the only guy who was getting hits, the feeling that you get like where with Brantley, you're like, this is a guy who's going to make contact. He's probably going to make good contact. He's right there in the three hole for you. I'm with you. I think it's probably more likely that Brantley's brought back. And what Keith Law says is a two-year deal like the one the Astros gave him 2 years ago would make sense. I would bring back Brantley in a second on the same deal the Astros gave him 2 years ago. 2 years, $32 million. In a second.
I think that more than anything will feel like the turning of the page on an era, right?
Springer?
We've been talking about all these guys. Yep. But I think in a way that, because I guess if contracts were lined up differently, if Correa were leaving, it would feel like the end of an era.
Yeah.
If Altuve were leaving, it would feel like an end of an era. But even as I say that, I feel like more so just with Springer. Springer has been unique to Houston. And Springer, I think it's easy. Like, let's say you're not a Houstonian and you're trying to understand what it's like being an Astros fan. It's easy to get Altuve. You know, it's easy to understand, this scrappy little underdog that nobody took a chance on. He had to come back a second day after he got booted out of the Astros prospect camp, all that stuff. Like, that's easy to understand. Correa, it's kind of easy to understand how Astros fans might have gone through a little bit of an uneasiness with Correa and now how we feel about him because he's stuck up so vociferously for the team. But with Springer, this is what you do. If somebody asks you what does Springer mean to an Astros fan, first you have to sit down and explain Club Astros. Then you've got to explain like George Springer overcoming stuttering. Then you've got to explain George Springer clowning around in the clubhouse with the dancing as a young fresh. Every now and then, like a young George Springer gif pops up on my timeline with his, clean shave and everything.
Big eyes.
Then you've got to explain like what he means to all his teammates. And then you've got to explain him running into various walls at various points in his career.
You mentioned six things and you haven't even mentioned this. He's really good at baseball too.
Yeah, exactly.
At the most important times, he's really good at baseball.
Up, I didn't bring up the fact that they kept him around on road trips even when he was injured because he meant that much to the team. Yeah, there's just so many things about Springer that you just wouldn't get unless you've been watching him the last 6 years.
I love these texts. This text, same number, same phone number, 2 minutes apart. Springer's coming back to the Astros. End segment. Kay, thanks, guys. 2 minutes later, I said end segment, guys. I said end segment. That's really funny. All right, Lisa.
It's funny, though, too, for anybody that was listening last segment. Everybody knows that Brandy is a huge Springer fan. Yeah. So there's no – I didn't want her to hear this, so that's why we planned this segment for when she'd be watching that poll
go
in.
We did. Yeah. All right. Watching that poll go in, baby. All right. Yep. So the next segment, Lisa Ann, fantasy football advice. She's –
All right. Okay. We're talking about a telephone poll.
Fantasy.
But like this timing. Okay. Yeah.
Football advice with Lisa Ann. If you are in a fantasy football league, get ready to send stardoms and sit-ems 713-572-4610. Text them in. She is next. It is week 8 of the NFL season. It is a bye week here in Houston, but it is not a bye week for fantasy owners. And this year, more than any other year, you got to work as a fantasy owner. Because there are things going on each and every weekend that are just completely unorthodox with the coronavirus and everything else going on. You need advice for the for your fantasy leagues, and we provide it for you each and every Friday at this time. We are joined by the foremost expert on fantasy football that we know. You can find her on Twitter at @TheRealLisaAnn. Lisa Ann joining us for her weekly visit. Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
Good morning. I am great, and I love that you're saying about advice. The best advice I can give to anyone in 2020 that's playing fantasy football is just be happy you're playing fantasy football.
Yeah,
most likely, you know, you're struggling to – bye weeks are really hitting us because there's been so many injuries. And with the new IR, knowing that you don't want to throw players back on the waiver wire because you might have them back in 3 weeks – you sometimes look at your bench and realize, who am I going to cut here to bring somebody in? So just have fun with it. This isn't a year where I think we need to be uber competitive. Just keep setting your lineup. Keep trying, enjoying the games, and looking at this as a time to really connect with your league mates and your friends.
Yeah, you bring that up. There's so many differences with the rules that they've put in place because of coronavirus. And I think a lot of teams are using that injured reserve rule to their advantage. Teams that haven't even had any coronavirus yet are using it to their advantage. How have you found that changing things for you, or how have you found it adjusting to the way you look at waivers and trades and things like that, knowing that some of these guys on your roster, like Christian McCaffrey, is going to be coming back pretty soon for owners of Christian McCaffrey? How has it affected handcuffs and everything else, the way you structure your roster?
Yeah, it's definitely made it more tricky, and it's definitely put you in a situation where, though waivers run mainly Tuesdays and Wednesdays, sometimes you can't make a good decision till Saturday. Because some of the news we're getting, like, oh, this facility has been shut down for 4 days. Week one, you may have panicked and gotten rid of all those players. I gave you an example last week. It was Joey Sly, the kicker from Carolina. Mm-hmm. I just have him on a ton of leagues because they have a later bye week, and I didn't want to deal with swapping out a kicker. And he was on the COVID list. Well, my friends that were in the leagues are texting me like, are you dropping him? I'm like, I'm going to wait till Saturday. What happens Saturday? He's off the list and he's able to play this week. So you got to be more patient, and you can't jump at every little bit of news that you have. Handcuffing is more valuable than ever. If you had Mike Davis, you really didn't miss a beat with Christian McCaffrey gone, and you can make that easy switch when McCaffrey comes back. But man, you know, there were so many running backs going down early the first couple of weeks, losing Saquon, losing Christian McCaffrey, losing your wide receivers and Michael Thomas and Devontae Adams. I think everybody just made so many moves that it was hard to keep your handcuffs. So yeah, one of your league mates is benefiting from your handcuff right now.
Yeah. Then I guess maybe, you know, you always try to go in deep, and I think a lot of people probably understand the importance of offensive line play. But the extra challenge this year is that at any given moment, a team might lose like three or four offensive linemen like the Giants this week. And that's going to affect his offensive line play, perhaps affected fantasy decisions far more than it ever has in the past.
It has. And, you know, also remember the opt-out date. There were a lot of linemen and defensive backs that opted out for this season over they being at more of an increased risk for COVID. So when you looked at the missing pieces before the season even started, you knew that these young players that were going to be brought up to replace them, They were really only going to be training in Zoom meetings. And that is not realistic for, you know, on-field play. So timing isn't really in sync. There's a lot of things that you just could not do. So it's definitely, we're seeing it. We're seeing higher scoring games week after week because there's just no defense. And by the way, the defense is gassed by the fourth quarter. And that's just because younger players are going out there that aren't as conditioned. And the players that have been in teams, like I'll use the Patriots, for example. I was listening to a really good report yesterday about what the Patriots do that is so different before the season starts to build up their team and their players. And it's very military style and it's very routine and the players actually really like it. And look how much it benefits them. They always have an incredible defense and they always have stronger offense than we're looking at right now. Now you're looking at the Patriots just like any other team because they didn't get that time to really amp everything up. And it's not the same Patriots that we're used to. And you can't just blame it on COVID. You have to blame it on the routine that was broken for players that are used to it.
Lisa Ann joining us for her weekly visit, some fantasy football advice. All right, Lisa, let's get into some specifics here. I would encourage people text in your questions on Stardom and Sit'em, 713-572-4610. I am a CeeDee Lamb owner. I know there's Amari Cooper owners out there and Ezekiel Elliott owners, but especially as a CeeDee Lamb owner who's been, he's been dynamite as a rookie, but that was with the Cowboys' first two quarterbacks. What does this DiNucci thing do to owners of Cowboys skill guys this week? And who knows until Andy Dalton gets back?
Yeah, this is really too much of an unknown. If you have the opportunity to bench CeeDee Lamb, bench Amari Cooper, bench Michael Gallup, I almost feel like you have to do it. If it's your only option, you're going to put him out there. Now, if you have the option to trade any of these guys, I would do that as well. I am out of the business of the Dallas Cowboys, even though they are my team. It's interesting to see Andy Dalton taking this long to get through concussion protocol, but look, that could change by Saturday. Again, the NFL has this great ability this season to not give us too much information and be able to change plans last minute. So we still could see Andy Dalton out there, but Dallas is just missing too many important pieces on the O-line and in the defense. And then when you add in the little weird mistakes, like when did Zeke start fumbling again? You know, what are we doing this season that is so off? It just seems like the energy is really bad. You heard Jerry Jones do a really off-putting interview the other day about how disappointed he is. He sees no leadership. Like, it's just combusting from the inside in. So I say this week, you got to bench him or see if there's a league mate that wants to buy in.
Lisa, I'm going to confess to something here, and it's that I have watched very little of Terry McLaurin, the young
Scary
receiver.
Terry?
Yeah. Like, and honestly, this is where fantasy football is good sometimes because, like, before fantasy, you'd have no reason to even think anything about Terry McLaurin, but he's 11th in the league in points, and he's doing a great job. How much of it are you buying in terms of him being long-term versus him playing in garbage time? Like, how for real is Terry McLaurin?
Terry McLaurin is the real deal. He showcased his abilities last season. I have him on quite a few of my teams. If Terry McLaurin was on a better team, you wouldn't even be talking about him in the tone that you are. He's in a situation where he has dealt with multiple quarterbacks and he is still 11th in the league in receiving. Like, he just gets it done. Let's just say hypothetically you were able to put him with Patrick Mahomes, the Kansas City Chiefs. This kid would be the next Tyreek Hill. He's so fast after the catch. That's what I love about him. And he makes plays happen because he has been having to adapt. It's so cool to see a receiver who has been able to adapt to this many quarterbacks and still succeed because that lets you know his skill set is there. This kid is a playmaker. I'd love to see him in a better environment, but he is the real deal. And you're right. Fantasy football makes you notice players that you would never notice. You're probably not even into watching the Washington football team if you weren't playing fantasy football. That's the greatest thing about fantasy football for the NFL in general. It really opens up the scope of what and who you're watching.
Well, and Lisa, I don't think a lot of people are seeking out the Bengals or the Chargers on the weekend on Sunday Ticket or, you know, waiting for their highlights on the Red Zone. But Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert have been two really good, I was going to say good rookie quarterbacks in fantasy football. They've been just good quarterbacks. They've been, especially Burrow, been putting up numbers. Where do you have both of those rookie quarterbacks right now? You know, what segment of the quarterback rankings do they fall in? Are they in top 10, top 15? Where are they for you right now?
They're in about the top 12 and they're inching up closer. Herbert would be even closer if he had stats for the entire season. Tyrod did get in a couple of games. Herbert has been dynamic to watch. He's so calm. He can make a mistake and then come back out there and be fine. He takes good hits. And then Burrow, who I drafted in quite a few of my leagues, I just really like his style of play. I thought it was going to be hard for him with the Bengals, but he is making his receivers look really good. AJ Green being decent this season for him as well. I mean, Joe Burrow, just like it must have been hard when you're looking at a team and going, who is he going to throw the ball to? But look, he's got players. He's making it happen.
How about the Odell Beckham Jr. injury? What's the impact there on fantasy, both with Baker, the Cleveland wide receiver rotation, maybe even keeper league guys who have Odell on their team? What's the Odell Beckham ACL impact?
This is a bummer. At this point in Odell's career, I worry that this could be really the beginning of the decline, right? The move out of New York wasn't great for him. He hasn't really connected and been in sync with Baker Mayfield to the point that we thought he would. He's not a star like he was a star when he was a New York Giant. I think for fantasy owners, you know, you just got to drop him. You're not going to have him this season. If you're in a dynasty league, you're going to have to wait and see what happens at the end of the season, how we hear he's recovering from this surgery. But I do think this is a bit of the decline. Now, for Baker Mayfield, I think this makes his life a lot easier because for some reason, I don't think he had that chemistry to be able to get the ball where he wanted it to Odell. So now that he doesn't have to worry about feeding that target, it's going to be interesting to see what he gets done without that little distraction of OBJ.
His QBR with Odell on the field and with Odell off the field, drastic difference. And not the way you think. Drastic difference.
No,
to your point, Lisa, it's
right.
Much better,
yeah,
with Odell.
Much better.
Off of the field. Yeah, all right, let's do some stardoms and sit-ems. 713-572-4610. Let's rapid fire some of these. Lisa, we have a Deshaun Watson owner here who's quarterback, obviously on a bye this week. Should I start my backup Jared Goff against Miami or pick up Joe Burrow? Wow, pick up Joe Burrow versus Tennessee.
Oh, it's going to be so much more fun to pick up Joe Burrow.
Yes.
I mean, Jared Goff against Miami, that's a pretty easy matchup as well, but the excitement's going to be all about Tua, right? Pick up Joe Burrow. It's so exciting that he's available. And even with Deshaun, there might be a matchup or two where you look at Joe Burrow and say, I'm going to play him over Deshaun this week. Why not? So, yes on Joe Burrow.
Mayfield, Tannehill, or Herbert, all available to be picked up since Watson is on a bye, and I cut Cam Newton. If you're an elite, wow, how many teams are in your league? Eight? Mayfield, Tannehill, and Herbert are all available on the waiver wire right now. What's your stack ranking for those three guys? I guess maybe stack ranking, Lisa, specifically for this week, since when Watson comes back, presumably that becomes this guy's starter again.
I would go Herbert, Tannehill, and Mayfield. That would be how I rank them.
Let's see, Le'Veon Bell or Boston Scott?
Lev Bell, for sure. This is a revenge game. I mean, he gets to start his first game for the Kansas City Chiefs against the coach that he hates with all of his might. The Jets are still playing. They're still paying Lev Bell. I love this whole story. It's fantastic. Play Lev Bell if you got him.
Now, Boston Scott, him playing into this storyline factors in with the Miles Sanders injury, right?
It does, but Boston Scott is very hot or cold. He has about three or four big games a season, then everybody goes out and gets him on the waiver wire, and then he does nothing for like 2 weeks. So I am not looking at this as a big Boston Scott day, and also the Lev Bell pick is just so over the top compared to Boston Scott.
Hunter Henry or Jonnu Smith this weekend?
Ooh, Jonnu Smith against Cincy. That's just a tasty matchup right there. What Cincy gives up in that secondary to tight ends. I'm going Jonnu Smith.
All right, a flex position, Josh Jacobs against the Browns or Jonathan Taylor against the Lions?
I'm going to go Josh Jacobs against the Browns. This kid's tearing it up. I think, you know, Cleveland's defense has been beat to shreds. So go Josh Jacobs.
All right, last one, and it's not a stardom sit-em, it's a keeper question. This person drafted CeeDee Lamb in the sixth round. If he keeps him, he would be his fourth round pick next year. So it's a keeper league, but it's like you using your pick for the following year, but two rounds up. Should he hold on to him or look to trade him now? Should he basically look at if you can get CeeDee Lamb in the fourth round in 2021, is it worth keeping him?
He is, because he's going to go higher than that in 2021. Remember, we have short-term memory here. We're going to be picturing Dak back out there and Dak working really well with CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb is a dynamic receiver who I believe will go in the second to third round of drafts next season.
I agree. Lisa Ann, she is at The Real Lisa Ann on Twitter, and she joins us each and every Friday to dish out that fantasy advice. Lisa, you're the best. We appreciate it, and good luck this weekend. We'll talk next week.
Enjoy the games. Thanks for having me and have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you, Lisa. Lisa Ann joining us on the show. All right, Seth, I feel like we need to close out the week with some Robert Saleh. Since he's on the bracket today, a 1-8 against Kevin Sumlin in our Texans head coach listener bracket. Do you want to fire off some Robert Saleh on the way out here on a Friday, get people in a good mood?
Let's do it. I want to get myself pumped up for the rest of this day.
All right, let's do this. Robert Saleh, take us into the back end of the show here.
Your staff completes you. He said this, and I'm really just repeating it, but your staff completes you. I can ask every single person in this room to describe a great coach. we all think we're great coaches. And the reality is we are all great coaches. But describe a great coach, and I promise you'll describe yourself. It's inherent. It's unconscious. If I ask Raheem Morris to describe a great coach, he's going to describe himself. If I ask Eric Bieniemy to describe a great coach, he's going to describe himself. We go back to what we learned with Pete Carroll in connecting to and understanding ourselves. Staff diversity goes beyond the color of our skin. And this is what Vrabes was getting to. You have to know your weaknesses. You have to connect to and understand yourself. And you have to understand what you can't give a player. No one coach can give a player everything. So, no, it's not good to hire 20 Robert Salas on a staff. Sure, I think I'm a hell of a coach, but there are things that I can't do that D'Amico Ryans can, or Chris Kocurek, or Joe Woods, who's now at Cleveland, or Jeff Hafley, who's at Boston College, or Johnny Holland, or Daniel Bullocks. There are things that they can do that one another can't, but together we make a staff. And so, yes, you want different race. You want different personalities. You need different values. But together, when you put together your staff, understand that you're bringing people who do things that you can't.
Seth, I like this guy.
I like Robert Saleh a lot. And this is where that whole thing that you always talk about, where, look, being an offensive coordinator is not the same thing as being a head coach of a football team. Being a defensive coordinator isn't the same thing. There are a whole lot of skills and traits that you need that really don't even get tested until you get to that level. I think Robert Saleh has certain less definable traits that you don't find in a whole lot of other NFL coaches. Whatever Robert Saleh has, Doug Marrone does not have. You know, whatever Robert Saleh has, let's say, I don't know, gosh, I would say Cliff Kingsbury doesn't have that same thing.
Yeah.
And maybe Cliff Kingsbury ends up being a really good NFL coach, but there are some guys who have it and some guys who don't. The hard part is figuring out whether it transfers over, you know, and whether it, but I think he's got a plan and he's got an understanding of the way NFL teams work. And he might be the dark horse favorite in a lot of Texans fans' minds right now.
Oh boy, that would be a lot of fun. All right. Reminder, if you want to sign up for the You Pick 'em contest, the Rocket Mortgage 2020 Pro Football Pick 'em contest, radio.com/picks. You can win $1,000 per week. Just pick 'em winners, baby. radio.com/picks. Seth, have a great bye weekend. Enjoy it. Antibodies to you, my friend.
Antibodies and a hologram Kardashian to you.
Thank you. I appreciate it. That's what I've always wanted, a hologram Kardashian. All right, we're done. In the Loop's up next. Landry Locker, John Lopez, Figgy Fig. Seth and I will be back 6 a.m. Monday. Until then, have a great weekend. Happy Halloween. We'll see you, everybody.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.